Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Just a few hours north of New York City, nestled in the picturesque Catskills, a classic diner was rescued by someone who'd never been in the restaurant business. Mike Cioffi is a Brooklyn-born man who was in the entertainment business, building scenery for Broadway and TV shows. Now, some 50 years after it opened, the Phoenicia Diner has become a destination spot. As friend of this show, Eaters Robert Sietsema wrote about it, Cioffi is certainly onto something in Phoenicia. He's invented a formula whereby a modern culinary agenda is promoted and farm-to-table values are preserved in an establishment that can be enjoyed by tourists, indigenous locals, and yes, hicksters. Given the history of the diner and its success, there is now the Phoenicia Diner Cookbook. It's full of the diner's approachable, comforting dishes that have made them a Hudson Valley hotspot. From all-day breakfast dishes like twice-baked potato skillet and K-Town shrimp and grits to elevated classics such as roasted chicken with tarragon honey, glazed carrots, and chili-braised lamb tostadas. To quote the introduction, it is every diner you've ever known, but with a view of the mountain ridge from the plate glass front wall and the cues on the menu and the prominence of trout, the local ramps, syrup and cider, and a bagel and lox with cream cheese, a nod to this region's tourist pass, are firm reminders that you are here. This is the Phoenicia Diner. I'm very happy to welcome Mike Cioffi, owner of the Phoenicia Diner, to the studio. Hi.
Hi.
Chris Bradley's joining us as well. He was chef there from 2016 to 2018. Hi, Chris. Oh, Chris not there yet. We're getting Chris along. But Sarah B. Franklin, professor of food culture and history at NYU's Gallatin School for Individualized Studies. She was also a contributor to this book. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there.
Sarah's calling us from Kingston.
Yeah.
Sarah, can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Okay, great. So, Mike, this diner officially opened in 1962. Describe it when you were visiting it. What kind of diner it was, who owned it?
Sure. It opened in 62. It was moved to its current location in 1982. So it lived for about 20 years over in Great Neck, Long Island. My wife and I have been passing that diner from the 90s to today on our way to Margaretville, which is where we have a kind of a getaway weekend place. And it was very sleepy. I would drive by that place hundreds of times through the course of the year and just stare at it longingly because it just sat in the middle of the most perfect spot. And you were describing the scene out of the window, and it's exactly true. You sit there, and there's no view like it anywhere, at least from a diner that I know of. So I kind of fell in love with it, the architecture. And was transitioning from a previous business, which you had mentioned before, and looking to kind of fulfill the next part of my destiny, I guess is how I describe it. And one day we kind of walked in, and I think there was kind of a whirlwind. The previous owner was a Greek immigrant who was amazing in his 80s, full of life and energy, still is. And we had a conversation, and I think it feels like in a half an hour we had a handshake, and about a week later I was the proud owner.
You strike me as like that moment when like the dog catches the car and says, "What now?"
Exactly.
What was your first "What now" moment?
It was almost immediate. As a weekender up there, I think I stopped into every restaurant around the area and just announced myself as someone who just bought the diner, and got as many suggestions and help as I could along the way. And I think coming at it at a kind of later in life, I really knew what I didn't know, which was a lot, and surrounded myself with some really good people, from the branding to how the financial aspects of the restaurant, that kind of stuff.
So, Sarah, where did you come into this process? What did you want to contribute to the book?
I came into the process right from the jump. So as soon as my husband, Chef Chris Bradley, was hired at the diner in 2016, I remember pulling Mike aside pretty early on and saying, you know, this is an amazing story. This place, this region of the Catskills, has such a deep and rich history, and the diner is partly responsible for getting that story back into a kind of contemporary lens that people are beginning to pay attention again. But what I was noticing is that a lot of people didn't have a sense of the past of the place. They kind of they saw it as a new and exciting place, a beautiful region to come and vacation or have a second home. But they didn't have a sense of its history and the role it had played in the state of New York over the past couple hundred years. And so I was really interested in writing a book that took what the Phoenicia Diner was doing and kind of wove it into a larger story about the past, present, and future of the region. And that became this really exciting project to research and write because I, as a new arrival in the region, my husband and I moved up in 2016 to the region from Brooklyn, got to dig into the archives and the research and look into the region's agricultural past, its tourism past, its past with bootlegging, which was one of the most fun chapters to write. The Catskills actually supplied a lot of New York and New Jersey with its hooch during Prohibition. And so it became this really incredible project of getting acquainted with the region that I had recently moved to and thinking about how food has created continuity in the Catskills culture.
Now, Chris, when you were chef there, how would you describe the cuisine when someone asked you, what do you serve at Phoenicia Diner?
It is classic diner fare. The only thing we've changed about it or tried to add to that story is to take part in the local agriculture, local distilling and brewing that goes in the area, just to make sure we're working with our community, with other people doing food production up in the area, to participate in that, as well as I come from a fine dining background, to elevate some of the cuisine a little bit by adding a little more technical aspect to the cooking. So, smooth soups that are not chunky and kind of too viscous. Nice rich broths for chicken noodle soup or our tortilla soup, which you see in the cookbook. So, just adding technique and adding quality ingredients, quality local ingredients to the fare.
My guests are Mike Cioffi, Chris Bradley, and Sarah Franklin. We're talking about the Phoenicia Diner and the new Phoenicia Diner cookbook. Mike, I'm curious because you said you've been going up there for 20 years. And full disclosure, my butt has been in the Phoenicia Diner so many times. And I've had a house in the Catskills for 25 years, back when they were throwing land away.
About the same time, absolutely.
You could buy things for like a dollar at that time.
Absolutely.
Not anymore.
Yeah, no.
But there's, the area has changed a lot, and there are days that I love all the changes, and there are days that I'm like, these hicksters need to just get out of my way and stop taking Instagram pictures. That's when I'm the old lady, hey kids, get off my lawn.
Completely understand.
You understand? So how do you, as someone who was going there for a long time, and you have a vibe of the place, and you've I have to say, and this is you've managed to hit this vibe. What was Robert was Seitzma's getting at? What did you think about when you wanted to create the vibe of the diner? What did you think about in terms of clientele, so that you could have the guys who still hunt there for food, can come in, as well as whatever alternative rock drummer?
Right, it's a great question, and I guess I go back to this word of authenticity, and when we arrived at the diner, one of the things that I did, or that we kind of noticed, was that we needed to edit what was there, and because the bones of it is a real diner. It has its firm roots in 1962, which by the way, so do I. That's when I was born, and we have an Airstream out back actually that we use as well. That was also built in 1962. So, this connection of way back when, and I think what we were striving for was anything that wasn't like a. I guess that may be a negative, but like a Johnny Rockets. We wanted to not, it was not a
manufacturer.
Exactly, right. So we wanted to be authentic in its sense of place. And like Chris said, in the food, I mean, we've elevated it, but I also use the word, contemporized it a little bit too. So, but you still, the fun part for me has always been like you're in this setting, and the food is elevated, so it's fun and it's a surprise. So I think that's what draws people up, mostly feeling like they've been in a place that's been there for a long time, and we haven't done anything to kind of change that feeling.
What was your experience? How did your experience as someone who built sets for Broadway TV shows? How did that help you out in creating the diner?
Well, fun part, friends in the business still, because that's basically where I've been steeped in, and I've had them come through and help kind of with the decor, but in the end, when I think about this now, it's the theater and and food and restaurants are the same in terms of it's a show. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that you don't see, that you don't want to see. And the feeling should always be like you're in this, enveloped in a set. And this particular one has an unbelievable interior, which helps us. And like I said before, there's some combination of that, the view of where it is, the sense of place. And Sarah hit the nail on the head in writing this, that we wanted it to be, you know, not only a cookbook, but this kind of love letter to the area, because it's a real important component to the place.
Sarah, as a history professor, can you just share with us a little bit about why diners mean so much to people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're the quintessential American restaurant in a lot of ways. So, you know, diners really rose and became popular as the car became popular and something that more and more people can afford. And so as people began to travel farther distances, either alone for work or with their families, diners became a place that everyone could stop in and get food that was familiar to them. And yet each diner always had the mark of its owners and their own cultural heritage on the food. So classically in the U.S., we tend to think of Greek-American diners with, you know, you might have eggs and grilled cheese and a hamburger, but you might also have something like spanakopita on the menu. But as people that live around diners know, depending on who owns the diner or into whose hands the diner passes, you get a slight twist on the menu every time. And so one of the things that we really wanted to do with this book is acknowledge that a lot of the kitchen staff has their roots in various parts of Mexico. And so our menu is really inflected with that heritage, with particular spices and herbs. There's the tortilla soup. There's also really, really rich chili paste that goes into that. So that's not something you would traditionally see in like a Greek American diner. You also have Jewish American diners. So you might have like a lox and schmear kind of a thing. You might have smoked fish breads. So we wanted to really integrate the various cultural groups that have passed through the Catskills in our menu and in the book, but also pay homage to the diner as a kind of American icon, which has always been about the moving demographics of this country that change very quickly and have changed over time.
And listeners, in about 10 minutes, we're going to take your calls on your favorite diner, your favorite diner in there. You can say Phoenicia, but in the New York City area, write down the number and give us a call. In about 10 minutes, we'll talk about it at 212-433-WNYC. Okay, Chris, I want to bring you in. I want to talk food. I want to talk about some of the recipes in the Phoenicia Diner cookbook. You include actually advice on how to use the book itself. Would you share some of that advice when you think about people getting this book and how they might use it?
Sure. I mean, I have found from a chef's perspective, diner cooking to be some of the hardest cooking to do, partially because that food is so, it's almost ingrained in your body, not even just in your memory, but people have a visceral reaction to how you make a tuna melt or what's in your chicken noodle soup. So from a chef's perspective, you know, it's really hard to please everybody. So what we tried to do was just, you know, make a statement, say, this is how we're going to do it. It may not be exactly how you did it, but give it a try and you'll really enjoy it. And so that's what we tried to communicate with the book is, you know, a lot of it is about getting things in place. We tried to write the recipes with the French chefs call mise en place, making sure you've got everything you need, pots, pans, knives, onions, carrots, all at the ready so that when you start to cook, it flows smoothly. You're not, oh, I've got to stop. Oh, this is going to burn while I stop to cut my onions. Now I've got to get this chicken out of the oven so that everything sort of flows from piece to piece so that you can put it together kind of smoothly. And also, you know, treat it like a real restaurant cooking situation where there are things that are cooked ahead and ready to just be assembled at the end. Again, so that you don't have to be stressed cooking from this book, so that it can be fun, so that if you're doing it while entertaining, whether it's a large group or just your family, that you're available to be present in the kitchen with them as well, and you're not overwhelmed.
You haven't heard the Phoenicia Diner Guide to Bacon Done Right. What's bacon done right?
You know, it's not so thin that it's gonna crackle and break apart. It's not overly crispy. It's not too soft. It's a lot more skill than you think. It's getting the temperature right, getting enough of the fat rendered out so that it doesn't feel slimy, It's got to hold up when you put it in a sandwich. We sell a lot of BLTs, so I hope you want to make sure you don't get bacon dust in your BLT, that each bite gets a nice crunchy bit of bacon with the mayonnaise, the lettuce, and tomato all kind of coming together in each bite.
So I'm going to, we actually posted on our website one of the dishes I order a lot, the Arnold Bennett yes. skillet, a.k.a. soft scrambled eggs right. with smoked trout. What is the secret to this one, Chris?
You know, I think it's, I mean, you'll have to talk to Mike about the invention of that, because that came into the restaurant before I started. But I think this goes back to actually banquet cooking. One thing that makes scrambled eggs nice and moist and doesn't allow them to get dried out and chewy is to add a little bit of fat. And in this dish, to add not just the fat, but a little bit of acidity to balance out that smoky trout. We use creme fraiche. Creme fraiche is sort of a sour cream product that you can actually cook with. If you heat up sour cream, it kind of breaks and turns greasy, but creme fraiche actually keeps its consistency, adds that bit of tartness, and gives a nice creamy fat that keeps the eggs nice and moist.
What's the story behind it, Mike?
It's just, it's one of those dishes that I think, you know, defines the Phoenicia diner, because it was a dish, basically. Arnold Bennett's a 19th century novelist, I think, if I'm correct, and I think I am. He might be the only novelist with a dish named after him, and you know, it's our twist on it, in the sense that it's smoked local trout. You know, like I'm sure it was some sort of haddock or something back in the day, and he, you know, I think it's a defining part of the diner. It kind of tells you at some point that you're not just in like a regular diner, and then like Chris said, you know, we've kind of elevated it at least, but it's still. It's in a skillet. It's, you know, part of the, you know, you're sitting next to somebody with a stack of pancakes. So it kind of brings everybody, levels the playing field for everybody.
My guests are Mike Cioffi. He is the owner of the Phoenicia Diner. We're talking about the new cookbook, the Phoenicia Diner Cookbook, with former chef Chris Bradley and Sarah B. Franklin, history professor. Sarah, well, one of the essays you have in here is about folk music, because this is the Woodstock area.
That's right, yeah. But you know, even before Woodstock came to, not Woodstock, but to Bethel Woods, you know, this area has such a long, rich history of folk music, and that really arrived when the Scots-Irish came into the area to start logging and working in the tanning industry. And so you actually had a summer camp that arrived in Phoenicia specifically right after World War II and started gathering young people around to go out into the community and capture some of those folk songs. And so it's got, a lot of people don't know this about the Catskills, but it has a real deep history as a kind of roots Americana region. And that rich tradition of getting together and listening to and writing and playing music is part of what laid the groundwork for the whole Woodstock culture and what continues today, which is that this region has a tremendous number of working musicians who live in the area, who perform in the area, and even who have recording studios in the area. So obviously Woodstock is a big part of that history, and you had Dylan coming up and Joan Baez was coming up, and obviously the band was in Woodstock. But that continues today. A lot of the best folk rock musicians in the country either pass through this region or live here. So we're so lucky in that way.
All right, we're wrapping up on time. You've got recipes like split pea soup, smoked salmon salad, asparagus cucumber. You've got a lemon meringue pie. Each of you, your favorite dish. Okay, Sarah, you go.
Oh, God. Lemon meringue pie is way up there for me, I gotta say. But also the onion rings are pretty killer.
All right, Chris, what's your favorite recipe in the book?
You know, the tortilla soup, really, because on a day like today, I don't know what it's like there in New York, but it's you need something that's warm, that's got a lot of punch to it, and it really again speaks to the guys that I work most with, the Mexican cooks that are in there, who really help us put this dish together.
And Mike?
Yeah. We have a tuna melt there, and it's just a very classic dish. It's named after my father-in-law, who lived on those things basically for all the time that I've known him.
The name of the book is The Phoenicia Diner Cookbook. Mike Cioffi and Chris Bradley and Sarah B. Franklin are its authors. Everybody, thank you so much for coming in.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.